And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Hey, what's up? Welcome back to Spin Rate, the Athletics Toronto Blue Jays podcast. My name is Drew Fairservice. We're so excited to be back talking about your Toronto Blue Jays. Not playing the most exciting brand of baseball right now. But you know what? That's what we're going to talk about, whether or not that's okay. This, as I said, is the Athletics Blue Jays podcast called Spin Rate, which you can get by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts. Go hook us up. And if you don't yet subscribe to the Athletic, which you don't need to do to listen to the show, but if you want to, make sure you go to theathletic.com/spinrate. Subscribe, give you a tidy deal, let you know that we sent you. And one of the things you get to do when you subscribe to The Athletic is read everything that Caitlin McGrath writes about your Toronto Blue Jays. And Caitlin McGrath, of course, is a journalist, a master of journalism, in fact. She covers the Blue Jays for The Athletic, and she's also the co-host of Spin Rate. Caitlin, how the heck are you?
I'm great. I am a master of journalism.
Every day you demonstrate your mastery of journalism on the within the pages of The Athletic, getting the story, getting the goods, getting the story, like the story of the Aaron Judge kid and the kind-hearted Blue Jays guy, which is maybe we can talk about that. Let's start off with that. Before that, we're going to talk about this weekend series in Cleveland. Not all good news. And then I think what we'll also talk about is, what does all this mean? Blue Jays have played 30 games now. Maybe we can zoom in, do some extrapolation, disregard the things we don't like, embrace the things that we do. That's how we do here. But why don't we start with that wonderful story? So since last we recorded, of course, the Blue Jays played a series with the Yankees that they lost, the first season series loss of the season. But, of course, the famous moment where Aaron Judge hit a very large home run off Alek Manoah. It was collected by a fan who immediately turned to give it to a young Yankees fan wearing a Judge jersey. But you, a master of journalism as you are, you were down there in downtown, beautiful downtown Toronto, and you sussed out the story. Went crazy. This was like a viral story. People are reading it all around the world because it's just so damn heartwarming. What did you learn when you got to talk to these amazing folks that were part of this incredible moment?
Well, it was kind of funny because it happened not too far away from where I was sitting, because the Blue Jays press box is located on the left field side. And obviously the home run went to the second deck of the left field stands, basically. So I could actually I was looking down on my computer, I think, when the moment happened, but it very quickly was like all over social media, and I could see from my seat like where they were. And so another reporter was with me in the press box, like Ian Harrison for AP, and he was kind of like looking at me like, are you gonna go find the kid? And I was like, I'm thinking about it. And he's like, you should go find the kid. And I was like, yeah, I think I'm gonna go find the kid. So luckily it was a short walk over there, a short elevator ride, and then walk over there. And yeah, I just went to the section that I thought it was, and actually as I was walking to the section, I saw the guy that handed the ball to him, and I was like, oh, excuse me, are you the guy that gave the ball to the kid? And he's like, I am. And then we just started talking, and while I was there, like a member of like the Rogers Center staff came up to him and gave him a little gift package, and then of course I met the kid, Derek, he was just so excited even when I got there, and it was like an inning later, and he was obviously like holding on to the ball with both of his hands and still sort of like overwhelmed, I think, by the moment. He was still like kind of both like in that kind of emotional state between like excited and almost like overwhelmed with emotion. As you kind of saw in like the video where like he gave the guy Mike a hug, and he just burst into tears. And so he was still kind of like, I think, coming down from that emotion when I talked to him, but he was lovely to talk to. He was really excited, obviously telling me all about how Aaron Judge was his favorite player. His whole family, his dad was there beside him. His dad was a Yankees fan. They're a family from Venezuela originally, and then they've lived in Toronto for 5 years. So the dad just kind of grew up a Yankee fan and passed that on to his family, his son, although Derek did tell me he likes the Blue Jays a little bit, but the Yankees are his number one team. And, you know, he's very excited to tell me about, you know, bringing the ball to school and showing all his friends and showing his little brother. And so it was just a really, you know, cute story to work on. I didn't think that it was going to blow up as much as it did. But I guess I'm not surprised either, because it's just kind of like a nice story. And I think after the couple years that we've had as a society, I think some people are just eager to read nice stories. And obviously the like bow on it was that because this moment just went completely viral online, his family was invited back to Rogers Center the next day by the Yankees and the Blue Jays. Actually, both families, like the guy who caught the ball, Mike, and his family came, and then Derek and his whole family came, and the Yankees invited him to meet Aaron Judge. And so he got to meet Aaron Judge, which if anyone's like seen Aaron Judge in person, he is like probably one of the largest human beings I've ever stood around and seen, seeing this small 9-year-old child just immediately like go up to Aaron Judge and like hug him and just be overwhelmed by meeting him was just like such a sweet moment. So that was fun. I felt like it kind of made the series feel a little better, I guess. Blue Jays
a little bit of sweetness with what was an otherwise kind of a sour.
Yeah.
Series.
Yeah, exactly. Now, especially that game, because like Jays lost that game 9-1. It was a close game, and then it all kind of went haywire in the seventh inning there.
That at bat against Judge was sort of like the turning point. Again, I think that Ricky and I talked about it, where he Manoah made a couple mistakes. One he got away with, and one he did not. But I think I saw Lindsay Adler tweeting about this, and I believe it's in your story as well. He is young Derek is named after a certain iconic New York sports icon, is he not?
Yes, he is named after the Derek Jeter.
No, I think I don't think that's right. I think he's named after former Islanders winger and former Leafs winger Derek King. Mm-hmm. That I don't want to quibble with a master of journalism, but I believe Derek King. Derek King scored 45 goals for the Leafs in 2 years. It's pretty good. I would name my kid after that, after Derek King. Islanders legend. But then, of course, the Blue Jays, hot on the heels of those good vibes, went on to play in Cleveland, which is Cleveland a bit of a perplexing bunch on their own, a team that I don't know that there was a lot of high expectations for, of course, having been, well, Cleveland, which is, you know, running that bottom basement payroll, but doing some good things in terms of discovering some good players. And I know that Zach seemed like he had wrote a really interesting story about how the Cleveland has like one of the top offenses in the league right now, but they're just
they just make a lot of contact.
They're just a little bit of a different style. I mean, it's maybe a bit of a throwback to the 2014 Cleveland or Kansas City teams, 2014, and then I don't remember what happened 2015, but 2014 where they made it to the World Series and with a really different kind of approach, but. An approach that seemed like it gave the Blue Jays a little bit of fits. Although the Blue Jays seemed a little bit content to give themselves fits. You know, the Cleveland is a team known for their pitching, but I don't think the Blue Jays in their offense that's really struggling right now. That might maybe the number one thing I would take away, other than they had the one explosion of runs. But other than that, they're not scoring a lot of runs. Am I crazy?
You're not crazy. They are not scoring a lot of runs. They're scoring. Last I checked, it was like 3.83 runs per game, which is below league average at the moment. And it's not, you know, they're not the lowest scoring team in the league, but they're far from the highest, which I think the Dodgers are the best scoring team right now. They're scoring more than 5 runs per game. And so that has been, you know, it's funny, like it's been hard to like reconcile how to feel about the Blue Jays in their 17-13 start, which honestly is like in good company in terms of being one of the better starts of a Blue Jay season. I think I looked it up today, and only 13 times have they started 17 and 13 or better. So it's a good start, but they just haven't done it the way that maybe most of us expected them to. They haven't done it with their offense. They've done it a lot with their pitching, a lot with just like winning those toss-up, coin toss, close games, some clutch hitting here and there. Like you said, they've only really had a couple like run explosions where they've eased into a win. And so it's been like kind of hard to figure out how to explain this team, because it's like they're playing well and 17 and 13 is a good record. But their offense hasn't looked good. And like, so it's like, this is a fan base that seems very frustrated right now, even though in theory it could be a lot worse and their team actually maybe has played their worst offensive month of the year and has come out of a tough stretch with a good record. And it just feels like this fan base is like ready to rip their hair out. Like, it feels like no one's happy. And it's like, I don't know. I think you should be happy with 17 and 13, but I also understand why people are like, this, you know, I can't watch this team any longer if they don't start scoring runs.
We'll be right back with more Spin Rate, but first, check this out.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
I don't think that it's necessarily related, but I think that there's a belief that all teams should play, or good teams or Blue Jays teams, good Blue Jays teams should play like the 2015 Blue Jays did in the last half of the season. I think that we have in our minds, some of us maybe, that that's what a good team, that's what a dominant team looks like. They win like every fucking night. They win by 1,000 runs. They get amazing starting pitching. Their lineup is a complete and utter murderer's row, and they play great defense. Like, that, they just decimate, you know, just destroy whoever they play. That's what a good team looks like. So, you know, when a good team like the Blue Jays are, cheats and begs and borrows and steals some wins through April, you know, as we talked about ad nauseum on this show, is like that. Those are good things. Those are good wins. But the fact that the Blue Jays are sitting there with like a negative 10 run differential, which would be supportive of over the season, like a team that's at 500 or below, but in through 30 games, it's like that's what a below 500 team looks like. It makes maybe the win-loss record feel a little hollow, which is, you know, not untrue in a lot of ways, because it is any blemishes on the Blue Jays as they are constructed are right now right up to the surface, right? Which we've seen where you have it when you have players like Lourdes Gurriel and Bo Bichette, who are both obviously good hitters, right? It's not up for debate whether or not Lourdes Gurriel Jr. and Bo Bichette are good hitters. I don't think it shouldn't be. They're also not the kind of hitters that you would think would be as maybe vulnerable to a deadened ball, like say Kevin Biggio, right? Which is something we've been saying for 2 years in a row. And has been proved out by his lackluster results. Like Lourdes Gurriel Jr. and Bo Bichette are going to be fine, but right now they're not. Just like Lourdes Gurriel wasn't fine at this time last year, but then he caught fire as one of the best hitters in baseball in the second half. They are as a team a bunch of guys of quite a few guys that swing the bat a lot, but they don't strike out. So that means they can get themselves into these ruts where they don't get timely hits or they don't get any hits at all. So right now you're not getting a lot from Gurriel. You're not getting a lot from Bichette. You know, you're getting more than you were. But you know, of late, you're not getting as much from that. And even Vlad, right? Like Vlad's in a little bit of a gully. You know, his numbers are far from what they were last year. But then I saw something which was even before, I think before the season, the series in Cleveland, where Vlad was definitely not at his best, but like describing how Vlad's numbers are worse this year. It's like overall, like raw OPS, for example, mm-hmm. but his when you correct it or you apply like an indexing, like an OPS plus, which is adjusted for the league and for the competition, it's actually better, even though his numbers are worse. It's because offense is really down this year. So I think that takes a bit of a mindset adjustment. And then just the fact that the team's flaws or the team's blemishes or the team's weaknesses are kind of on display. I mean, I don't know what you know. I know you wrote a post about this, about things we know, or a post, a story about this, about, you know, things we know about the Blue Jays. Like, is there anything that's glaring that you say is in need of correction rather than just kind of waiting it out?
Well, that's the weird thing, is like, it doesn't feel that way. It's really hard. Like, they're not walking as much, but it's not like by a huge margin. Like, I think they're maybe down like 2-3% of where they finished last year. But if you looked at, like, you kind of compared the two Aprils, or not necessarily the two Aprils because the weird way this year was kind of delayed, but I think it was like the first 26 games or something like that I looked at. And like, if you looked at the offensive numbers, they were really similar. And in some ways, the actual raw numbers offensively were better this year, in the sense that the Blue Jays were hitting the ball harder consistently. So more, their hard hit rate was higher. Their average exit velocity was higher. And they weren't getting the results, but obviously sort of the process looks good. Now, you would have to think, or you had to wonder, I suppose, that the ball has something to do with that. If they're hitting the ball harder and it's not going out, we've seen mm-hmm. examples of that where it's like a ball was hit to the warning track, and last year it felt like that would be a ball that was out of the park, and now it's just a fly out. So I guess as the season goes on, like, it may be worth monitoring, like, if this is a team built around hitting a lot of home runs and the ball isn't getting hit as much, you know, maybe there will be a dip in their offense. Now, they hit a ton of home runs last year, and a lot of their home runs, I mean, it's hard to remember all of them, but I don't, you know, it's not like a ton were like wall scrapers, you know, like they, a lot of times when they hit the home runs, they were hitting them quite hard. So they should get back to that. Maybe they're not going to be there. Maybe they're not going to set another franchise record this year with home runs. I mean, they don't have Marcus Semien on the team hitting 45 home runs this year. And Matt Chapman's going to hit some, but I don't think he's going to hit 45. We may just have to expect that this offense isn't going to be as powerful as last year's. Like, there could be a dip in that, but I still think it's going to be a good offense. I mean, the weird thing, or the most glaring thing, has been their hitting with runners in scoring position. It's just been terrible. And I looked at it today, and there was that stretch last year, if you recall, it was the end of August, I believe, and it kind of felt like what we've gone through in this last month, or these first 30 games. It was not as many games. It was more of like a 2-3 week stretch, I think. But it felt like all those games were like 2-1, one, like, you know, 2-1, 3-2. They were losing to the Tigers and they couldn't score runs. And like, they were hitting terribly in runners in scoring position at that point too. I think it was like something under, it was 179 or something batting average with runners in scoring position. And then in September, they started hitting the ball a lot, scoring a lot of runs, and they were hitting 281 is what I wrote down, with runners in scoring position. So a lot better. And so I think it's unsatisfying to just kind of say, like, they will regress positively when it comes to runners in scoring position. But it's like, you know, they're hitting the ball really hard. They have a really, really low batting average on balls in play in runners in scoring position that is way lower than what they normally are. You know, normally they're hitting like 280-something batting average balls in play, which is like in the normal range. And then with runners in scoring position, they're hitting like 180 or something like that. Like it's they're not getting any luck in those situations. And so you would just assume that that has to change. But it has been, you know, I think there's been a little bit more swing and miss in the hitters' approaches. I think pitchers are probably approaching them differently. But, it hasn't been, off the charts or anything like that. You know, it's been a little more, but not a ton more. They're not really striking out any more than they did last year. So it's just been weird to kind of not fully understand why they're not hitting. And it's maybe just unsatisfactory to say, like, they're just not getting the bounces right now.
I think that I agree. I think there is a lot of bad luck. A lot of bad luck that is, I think, compounded by the way that they've kind of gone about experiencing this bad luck, if that makes sense. There was someone that tweeted at us the other day, you and I, in response to the show being shared by the Athletics account. Mm-hmm. And it was talking about the Blue Jays' track record swinging at the first pitch in particular with runners in scoring position. Now, the Blue Jays are a team that smashes the first pitch, that is really aggressive and often does damage. So when this guy asked this of us, they had two hits all season swinging at the first pitch with runners in scoring position. That's now gone up to four. They have a weighted on base average of 190 swinging at the first pitch with runners on base, which is, again, is a micro split. It's not reflective of their, it's not a projectable number. That this is a storytelling piece, right? This is what they've done. This is how they've gotten here, is to end up with the worst number in this random micro split that I've concocted. And then again, we talk about Cleveland. We talked about how Cleveland is putting the ball in play, but there's a difference of like 50 points of batting average on balls in play between Cleveland and Toronto. Mm-hmm. Cleveland has one of the highest batting averages on balls in play in all of baseball. Other than that, that can make up for such a difference. It can, having a little bit of that luck, a little bit of cluster luck, a little bit of dinks and dunks and things landing where you need them to land, then suddenly you have a surprising offense and you got the Zach writing these stories about you for the Athletic. And when you don't have it, then you end up like you being like, I don't know what's wrong with the Blue Jays. They seem pretty good. And, we talked so much about home runs. The Blue Jays are still sixth in all of baseball. They're third or fourth in the American League in home runs. Like, if anything, number one, obviously this situational hitting is a challenge, but B, it's the part of the situational hitting is not hitting as many of the home runs when there are runners on base. They're not maximizing or optimizing these home runs and these run scoring situations right now. Like, again, we're talking about a one weekend, right? Because for last time you and I spoke, we were doing the opposite. We were saying they're getting these clutch hits and they're getting the one hit when they most need it, even though they didn't get six of them in the lead up in the third and the fourth and the fifth inning. They didn't get these hits, but then they got it in the eighth and they won the game. Yeah. So that's kind of where we were. And now we're on the flip side where they're not getting those clutch hits.
Yeah. And just to add, like, I mean, I looked at it earlier today and maybe I should pull it up again, but, you mentioned like the home runs, like they're still in the top, half, of the league in terms of like hitting home runs. And I think like in terms of like even their OPS, while it's not leading the league like it was last year, but they're like middle of the pack. Like they're certainly not like the worst hitting team in the league. Like their hits are still like, they're getting hits. They're just like not getting as many timely hits as you would want, or they're not getting as many hits in a row so that they can string together some big innings or whatnot. Like, but they're getting their hits and stuff like that. It's been weird. It's been all over the lineup, not happening in succession. Maybe you put a lot of that on the fact that they were missing Teoscar. Look, I just pulled it up. So this is before play, like today, because this is on Fangraphs, so it wouldn't be updated from tonight's games. We're recording on Monday, but they're seventh in hits with 234. The top team with hits is the Mets with 257. So they're not like, hugely off the pace on that. I mean, that's just like hits, but
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, like, it's weird. I think that's another element that is weird about this, because it would be one thing if like the offense was just like all together terrible, you know, just like really not starting well, but it's been fine. Like it's not been, they've not been blowing the socks off people. I think the main thrust of the issue has been the situational hitting as opposed to the hitting in general.
I also think that there's one really good way to sync your offense, or there's the best way to have your offense be inefficient or not come up with clutch hits is have like very significant sinkholes in the lineup, which when I talked about the 2015 team as an example, that was a team that has no sinkholes. There were no holes in the lineup. There was nobody that was an easy, someone that you could take a bit of a break with if you're the opposing pitcher. But right now, that's not true. You know, Ramel Tapia gets a lot of playing time and he can't hit at all right now or in general. Even Matt Chapman, right? Matt Chapman has had some really inconsistent at plate appearances. He struck out four times the other day. I don't think anyone would be in their right mind would complain about Matt Chapman, but like every bit of playing time, that's why we talk so much about the idea of replacement level and just like, you know, the Blue Jays brought in guys like Bradley Zimmer and Ramel Tapia to do specific jobs. But now they've already been asked to do a little bit more than you think they would have been asked before. You know, losing Danny Jansen, A, takes a good hitter out of the offense, but then it also takes another option away from DH, right? Where now previously you could have had Kirk in DHing with Jansen behind the plate. And now if Kirk's behind the plate that much more, now there's somebody else who's got to go hit. And like, you know, the Zach Collins thing has been fun, but do we think it's going to last? You know, what's he been, in the last however long? The last 7 days, he has a 29 weighted runs created plus, like, which is again, and Tapia and Zimmer and Gurriel all in the negative, you know, in the last week or so. And again, because it's only a week, nothing means anything. It's a week, but we're not, I think that's the thing. You can do what we're doing now, which is sort of diagnosing what has happened, but I don't think that, and to your point, and as you eloquently said in your piece, as a master of journalism, these aren't like big problems. These aren't capital P problems, right? There's nothing glaring about the team that you're like, they got to get this fixed. You got to get Danny Jansen back healthy. You got to get Teoscar Hernandez back in the swing of things, you know, in the lineup every day. And the rest of that stuff is going to all sort of take care of itself. Yeah. If you really think that the Blue Jays are going to be the worst offense in any category, like, again, I created this micro split because this guy asked us on Twitter, but like, do you believe the Blue Jays will have the worst performance in anything, even if it is random and completely devoid of skill or repeatability? I don't. The Blue Jays are a good offensive team. I think they're going to be fine. They will begin to fire on all cylinders and then they'll score a bunch of runs and we'll all forget that we ever had these conversations.
Yeah. And I think like, again, just to point to like, I know maybe it was a different team then, but they are kind of right where they were last year. In fact, they're better. I think last year over their first 30 games, they had 16 wins. This year over their first 30 games, they have 17 wins. So they have an extra win. That's that extra win if they would have had last year, they would have gotten postseason. The other thing that I wanted to mention, just because you brought it up sort of, but you have to remember, like, when you lose Danny Jansen, you also lose your best catcher, your best all-around catcher, I guess, the guy that knows the staff the best. And then you put a lot more on Alejandro Kirk's plate in terms of having to catch a lot more, having to have a lot more on his plate defensively as well. And so then instead of using him as primarily like a DH catcher, he's like in a role where he has to do a lot more heavy lifting on the catching front because you don't have Danny Jansen there. And so I think that probably contributed maybe to his slow start, and he's swinging the bat better now and he's hitting the ball harder. And so there was like some positive signs from Kirk in this last series, even if overall the offense didn't really have their complete explosion. But I think that the Blue Jays have kind of said like they understand that there's been more on Kirk's plate this first month of the season because Danny hasn't been around. So that's also something to consider. And yeah, I mean, like you said, I think this week they're playing the Yankees and they're playing the Rays. They're going to have Teoscar in the lineup again. He's going to continuously get more at-bats, get more in a rhythm. And I think you're going to see more lineups that are going to look like more competitive lineups that we thought we would see, you know, when you're kind of drawing it up, with the exception of still not having Danny Jansen in the lineup. But, you know.
The Blue Jays, also looking back over the last week, they only had 3 home runs in the last week. Which, by the way, the Royals, A's, and Tigers all hit 1 home run in the last 7 days. That's crazy. That's awful. There's not really much to complain about on the pitching side, I guess. I mean, we've talked a lot about Kevin Gausman, obviously, as we mm-hmm. should. Talked a lot about Alek Manoah. You wrote a nice piece about Yusei Kikuchi coming around a little bit. I don't know. Is he less of a concern as we start to, again, if we're really going to pick nits and be like, what is it we need to change about this baseball team? Is the fifth starter what needs to be changed? I don't know that I would agree with that, but I'd love to know what you think.
I think that's just good to see that some of the sort of changes that the Blue Jays have suggested to him, that he's, one, you know, very accepting of them, and he's really, really enjoyed his time so far with the Blue Jays, like in terms of getting along with Pete Walker and really, I guess, connecting to Pete Walker. And he said something like he connected to him both on like a baseball level but a personal level. So they're working really well together. And, you know, Kikuchi was also saying, which was like very sweet, was just like how happy he's been that all his teammates have been so supportive of him. Like, he knows he didn't get off to the best start, but he just felt a lot of support from everybody, and everybody's really been rooting for him. So he was really, really pleased to have that nice outing against the Yankees and get his first win. And kind of everything kind of come together in the sense that, like, he was commanding his fastball better. I think he was getting more first strike pitches. He was pitching with that sort of new breaking ball he's developed, which is like not quite the cutter, but it's more so a hard slider that Pete and the Blue Jays have kind of just told him, use this, because the cutter maybe wasn't getting the results and it wasn't really benefiting him the way that maybe he had hoped or, you know, previously. And so it's all about, you know, the fastball, commanding it, getting it up in the zone, throwing it a lot more, and then using that slider as well, which obviously makes you think of another guy that had success with the Blue Jays. But yeah, I think it's just with Kikuchi, like, it'll be interesting to see how he fares against the Yankees again. Also, I've written this and I've mentioned it a few times, but we all have to just like appreciate the tough schedule, I guess, that Kikuchi has had to pitch. Like, he has exclusively pitched against the Yankees, the Red Sox, and the Astros. Like, those were all the teams mm-hmm. he's had to pitch against. Like, he did not get in that A's series. He didn't get in this Cleveland series, even though Cleveland is apparently a good hitting team now. But, like, I'm just, like, and now he'll place the Yankees again. And I think the next time around, I'm not sure what they'll do, but he might be facing his old team, Seattle, which is always a tough challenge, too. So it'll be interesting to see how he fares against the Yankees, though, because they're seeing him so quick back-to-back, and that's always tough. And it's Yankee Stadium as well, where he was getting hit really hard the first time he went out and faced them there. But it seems like he's a pitcher. It's like, if he's commanding his pitches, he's tough to hit. Like, he has good stuff. It's clear that he has good stuff.
Absolutely. The stuff isn't the question. And if you're a Blue Jays fan, which you're listening to this, you probably are.
Or you hate listening to us.
Yeah, like, I can't wait to hear what those idiots think about that terrible team that I hate. My time is worthless. That he is all in and, like, buying into the team's philosophy and, like, willing to embrace what they are going to suggest to him and changing the shape of his pitches, I think that's really important because that takes work, right? And it takes putting in that work in between starts, and it takes belief. And if you're a Blue Jays fan, you have to think that's such an encouraging thing to know that you've earned the belief of players, A, because you gave them money, but B, that they are like, your track record is such that a guy is going to invest his belief in you, in your process, in your organization, and your ability to get the most out of him. Again, even though you've already given him a bunch of money. So I think that that's a really encouraging sign. And that doesn't mean that they are going to turn him into Robbie Ray. It doesn't mean he's going to become the Cy Young. But all the pieces are there. The stuff is there. And when there's that willingness to learn, the willingness to embrace change, the willingness to understand that the things might feel weird at first and might take some time, that's huge. And then if it's a matter of like changing up his pitch selection, or if it's a matter of, again, just mastering a new pitch in a way that allows you to really command it to the part of the strike zone that he really needs to command it to, that's going to go a long way. Because I think that, you know, like, he's had, what, one good outing and a couple bad outings.
Yeah, I would say there was like one so-so, a couple bad, and one good, maybe.
Yeah, like he was pulled. He's been pulled in he went five strong, and then he went against, six strong. Or in the second start of the year, he went five strong against the Red Sox.
Yeah,
and like that is, to me, I'll take that every day.
Yeah,
I'll happily take a five and dive. You know, walk a couple guys, trick a couple guys out, but just go in there and eat some innings. That's kind of not, I mean, you know, at the risk of being dismissive, that's what he needs to do. And then the Blue Jays will take care of the rest themselves. Again, once the offense that we've spoken in such glowing terms about figures it all out, I don't doubt that just the ability to do that job, just to come out and to be aggressive and not nibble and not try to fool everybody or not trying to trick anybody into thinking that they're going to, you know, you're going to embarrass them or have them swinging out of their heels. Just be effective. And I think that is not a tall task for someone like Yusei Kikuchi. More Spin Rate coming up right after these words from our sponsors.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
We're not there quite yet, but the bigger question might be Hyunjin Ryu still. I mean, he's probably on his way back soon. He had a rehab outing over the weekend, I believe, and it went so-so, I guess I would say.
Apparently, like, though, I think I remember overhearing somebody say, it might have been on the broadcast, that they're happy with the things that they're looking to be happy with. Maybe the results weren't like...
I think the command was there. He didn't walk anyone. He had six strikeouts. He allowed five hits, and it was like five runs, but it was like two earned. There was some fielding errors that he had to deal with. So I think that I wasn't around the team this weekend in Cleveland, but... just, I feel like I saw on Twitter, or maybe I did hear it on the broadcast too, but yeah, I think there was some promise shown in that rehab outing with Ryu, in the sense of like, yeah, he wasn't walking anyone. He wasn't, you know, the command wasn't way off. He allowed one home run, but just one. So
that is a debate I think we can save for another day, because I think I think it's going to be worth asking, like, what's going to look like. Like, what if you're the Blue Jays and Hyunjin Ryu comes back and is ineffective again, Like, how many phantom injuries are you going to be able to cook up to keep him off the field? It's going to be it has the potential to get a little dicey.
It's really delicate, too, because I think it doesn't get a lot of attention because Ryu doesn't talk to the media a ton. Not because he's doesn't want to talk to us. He's just really busy. Like, he has, like, a really, like, regimented routine, I think. And so he's not often, like, sitting in the clubhouse. In fact, I would never see him sitting in the clubhouse. So he's kind of just hard to track down in terms of trying to get to the media. But I just know through talking to the other pitchers, like, he is, you know, he's really important to the sort of, like, I don't know, the bond of all the starting rotation. Like, he is a huge mentor to Alek Manoah. He is the guy that kind of encourages the rotation to, like, go out for dinner. Like, I know Kevin Gausman was like, I really want to go for dinner with Ryu. Like, I want to go to a Korean restaurant with Ryu. Like, he's kind of a glue guy for that rotation. And so I think the Blue Jays also have to be mindful of, like, you know, it's not, you're paying him $20 million this year and next. But he's also sort of an important crux in your clubhouse for that rotation. Mm-hmm. So he's not necessarily mm-hmm. a guy that you can just, like, release, like, not just because of the financial constraints that you have with him, but just, like, what he means to the team. It's a really, really delicate situation. So it's not really something that the Blue Jays are going to be easily able to handle. And you're right. Like, at some point the injuries are, you know, these, you know, whatever it is, like inflammation or irritation or discomfort or all that kind of stuff, like, they can happen, but at some point they're going to have to figure out what Ryu is, and maybe they'll just have to get creative, and maybe it's a situation where at some point Nate Pearson has to play a role, and, you know, they're going to pair them together all the time, and it's like, if Ryu can go 3 or 4, and then we put Pearson in there for 2 or 3, and then that's how we do those games. I don't know. Like, this is obviously a discussion we have to have, because Ryu could come back and he could look great his next time out. But I just wanted to put that out there that, like, you know, this isn't some simple decision where the Blue Jays have to think, okay, we'll just release him. Like, this isn't a Tanner Roark situation, you know? Like, no. This is – it's a lot different.
If anything, it's maybe a bit more similar to, like, the Troy Tulowitzki situation, mm-hmm. where they did in the offseason. They, like, had a meeting. They went to his, they, you know, called him in and then, like, sat him down and did it face to face. And again, it wasn't that long ago that they had, I'm sure that there was a full, like, pitch deck where they had to sit down and, like, sell Hyunjin Ryu on the idea of coming to Toronto. And for it to have gone so far south so quickly to the point where the Blue Jays would potentially be like, well, we are, this is not going to work out for us anymore. So that would seem crazy. So it'll be interesting to see. And you know, if ever anyone was going to benefit from the worst, from the soft ball, maybe it's going to be Hyunjin Ryu. I mean, so.
Which and like, they're not, my sense is they're not close to that. They're pretty optimistic what they've seen from him in the live BP and, like, some of these rehab outings and just things where they've seen him in sort of lesser competition settings. They're optimistic, but you're not going to really know the full answer until he gets into a game. And, like, that first game could be against the Rays, I think, over the weekend, which is, you know, not easy.
Well, maybe they can ease him into some starts, like,
They don't play the Orioles until, like, June.
Even that. The Orioles can score some runs. That was the
Seattle
thing.
Maybe? Seattle hasn't been scoring runs.
Seattle has almost the same number of home runs as the Blue Jays. They're only, like, one behind. It's trouble. It's trouble and it's troubling. Caitlin, what do you got for the people coming up this week? The Blue Jays have the Yankees coming up this week. I guess we've kind of alluded to that. How many times do they play the stupid Yankees? I'm tired of this. The Yankees are good. This is irritating. So the Blue Jays are 6th in home runs and the Mariners are 7th. Mm.
The Yankees are probably 3rd, I think, maybe.
In home runs? The Yankees are 1st in home runs.
In the American League, not in...
In the whole league.
Oh, in the majors? Interesting.
Yeah. The Yankees, Houston, and then the Angels. 1, 2, 3.
The Yankees are good. Although they're, like, similarly, well, at least in this series, they played this weekend against the Rangers, which they had a ton of rainouts. And so they played, I think, 2 on Sunday, and then they played 1 today, which was supposed to be an off day. Mm-hmm. And they won the series, but they weren't scoring a ton of runs. I think they won today 1-0 in a near no-hitter from Nestor Cortes Jr. I think it got broken up in like the eighth inning or something. Mm-hmm. And then the Yankees scored, I think, in the bottom of the eighth, one run, and that won them the game. But I believe this was like a similarly scoring-wise series as the Blue Jays has had recently. It was like, you know, Texas was winning 2-1, and then the Yankees were winning 2-1, and then the Yankees won 1-0. So there's other teams out there that aren't scoring. So it'll be interesting to see how the Blue Jays, because actually when they played the Yankees that first week in Yankee Stadium, they played really well. It was a really competitive series. That was when Vlad had his huge game against Gerrit Cole. Mm-hmm. Basically.
So it's worth noting, though, that on the season, the Yankees have the best offense in baseball by some measures. So they don't have the same problem that the Blue Jays have, in that they only have one real like black hole in their lineup, right? They have Kyle Higashioka, who's not having a good offensive season at all, and Joey Gallo, who's having like a well below average for him, factually below average for the league, but they have a lot more guys that are swinging, you know, the bat more in line with what you would expect, and a few of them who are outperforming what you would expect. Like Anthony Rizzo, for example, who's always been a good hitter, who's off to a great start. You know, a bunch of little cheapy home runs don't hurt, but nevertheless, the Yankees have scored a lot of runs, and their pitching has been outstanding. As you mentioned, Nestor Cortes, who apparently, if you go back to the beginning of the 2021 season, has the lowest ERA in the American League, which is not something I would have expected. It's even something I just said out loud, and I don't know that I even believe it. But here we are.
I bet you Alec Manoa's up there on that list too, I would say. I mean, he didn't start till May though, so
it all counts.
Or the end of May.
Nasty Nestor. He is filthy. Man, there's a lot of National League dudes in there. Anyway, the Yankees are a tough matchup, and the Blue Jays will be good to be done with them for a while and moving on to different parts of the organization or of the league, but they got to win these games, right? They're in this mini little skid, and it would be great if you're for the Blue Jays to pull out of it. And having Teoscar Hernandez back would make a huge difference. Or, you know, as Teoscar, who's only played 2 games, so not reflective of who and what he's going to be. Again, I'd like to see a little bit more from Lourdes Gurriel Jr. That's my thing. He's my player to watch. I think in some ways, you know, we say that Teoscar Hernandez is kind of the straw that stirs the drink. I think it might be Gurriel. Mm. I think that when Gurriel is because he is capable of doing so much, and because he has like Vlad has a really high floor. I think Teoscar has a pretty high floor because he has I like his approach a lot. He's not quite as like maniacal as Bo and Gurriel, which is like has its appeal in its own way. I think it was the Zoobs that has said this more than once, that when Gurriel's going, they're hard to beat. But
if you think about like when he got hot and the team play started, I mean, the team's second half was their stronger half of the two. Not all of that was because of Gurriel. Some of that was also their bullpen got better and their starting pitching got better because the trades they made. But yeah, I think that's honestly, I kind of agree with that observation. It's like, I think it's also just because it's like, you know, the top 4 or 5 guys are going to hit. But if your number 6 hitter is Lourdes Gurriel, or number 5 or 6 hitter, whatever, wherever he's hitting, is, you know, a guy that can come up and do a lot of damage. He like set a franchise record last year, I think, for hitting grand slams. He hit so many. He had like 4 grand slams. So if he's doing that, then yeah, you're going to be a really good offensive team.
And an absolute like all time celebration too. After the grand slam that he hit at the end of the year, when it just like the full on like fired the bat straight into the ground.
One against Oakland.
Yeah. was a good one.
Because he had another one after that, I think, against Baltimore when they scored like 22 runs in that game.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that those ones against Baltimore don't count, though. Nobody was nobody was fired up about those. That was like a grim death march where everyone involved knew exactly what the destination was, but they knew they still had to walk either. Anyway, it's like when you it's like in a movie when they ask a prisoner, like, dig your own grave. It's like, do I have to?
Anyway. Or it's like this. It's like that Simpsons. That Simpsons meme, where it's like, "Stop, stop! He's already dead."
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That was before the game even started, though.
That's the Blue Jays. They just don't even want to play them.
What do you have for the people coming up this week, Caitlin?
Well, I have just my regular This Week in Jays coming out tomorrow. I have a few things that I'm working on. There's going to be something I'm going to try something new this week, which is going to involve some audience engagement, I think. And then I'll be heading to Tampa in a few days. So I'm not going to be in New York, but I'll be in Tampa. So that'll be exciting. Get some nice Florida weather.
Who wouldn't want to go to Tampa, Florida when they can go to New York? Not me.
Well, I've already been to New York this year, so might as well hit up Tampa. I like the Trop. I actually like the Trop in the sense that the press box is spacious, and that's what I look for in a ballpark. I don't care about sight lines or the seats. I just want a spacious press box.
Get up off me. Interesting stat to follow up to your point. I just, Chase, I'm doing a little follow on your story. So Lourdes Gurriel has 4 career Grand Slams. How many Blue Jays have hit more Grand Slams than Lourdes Gurriel, would you say?
Like in their careers?
In the history of the team while wearing a Blue Jays jersey.
I would say like 1 or 2.
The answer is 4.
Oh, okay. Carlos Delgado?
It is. Carlos Delgado has the most. He has 9 Grand Slams as a member of the Blue Jays.
Encarnacion, is he on that list?
He is. He is 3rd. He has 6 career Grand Slams as a member of the Blue Jays. There's 2 others. One you'll get, one you probably won't.
Was another one like an obvious one, like Josh Donaldson or Bautista?
No, neither of those two. Bautista is a little surprising.
Yeah.
But Donaldson, not so much. He only played a couple of years, right?
Yeah, I guess.
One is 2nd all-time for Blue Jays Grand Slams, George Bell. He had 7 Grand Slams. And the other one is Vernon Wells.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
He had 5 Grand Slams.
So Gurriel has 4 already?
Gurriel already has 4, which ties him with Darren Fletcher and Joe Carter.
I feel like he hit all 4 last season. If he didn't, it was 3 last season. He hit 1 previously. But I feel like he hit all 4 last season.
Let me see. I would believe you if you told me that. He did. He hit 1, 2, 3, 4. He hit 1 in June, 1 in July, 1 in, and then 2 in September. He hit 2 in a span of 2 weeks. 1 against Oakland, as I mentioned, which was when they were down 8-4. Mm-hmm. Big comeback. And the other one was against Baltimore, as you mentioned, in the first inning. So they were already up 1-0, and then he hit a grand slam in the first inning.
Is that the was game when they
had scored like a million runs the night, like at the end of the other one, and then they just kept going, right? That's
they scored like 44 runs in 3 games or something like that. Or 4 games. It was 4 games because they played a doubleheader. Mm-hmm. They played, and that was also the game. I was in Baltimore, and that was like the wackiest 3 days of my experience, because I remember sitting there. They came back to win. It wasn't like a walk-off, obviously, but I think George Springer put them ahead in like the 8th inning when they were losing. And then they were getting no hit through 6 innings in that 2nd game of the doubleheader, sorry. And then they started scoring. They scored like 11 runs or something in the last inning. And I just remember sitting in the press box and feeling like so uncomfortable for like the Baltimore writers. It's like, we're like apologizing. We're like, we're sorry. Like, this is just what they do. And like, that was so weird.
So they won that game that he hit his grand slam, Gurriel. They won that game 22-7. That was that one. And the other one was 11-2. That's right. They scored 11 runs in the 7th inning.
Yeah.
They scored 11 runs in the 7th inning, and then they scored 5 in the 1st, and then 1 in the 2nd, and then 10 in the 3rd. So they scored like 30 runs in 4 innings or something obnoxious like that.
Yeah. So if they could just, Gorsum runs like that again in the next little bit. I mean, but they don't even just do half of that.
Scorch but even that, though, runs. That stretch of domination kind of goes back into what I was saying about 2015, where people remember that. They know that that's what this team can be capable of. They can be capable of absolutely blowing the doors off of any team in baseball, and even Baltimore that barely qualifies as a team in baseball. So it'll come. I truly believe that it will. I think that getting healthy is going to be a huge thing for them. Danny Jansen coming back, Teoscar Hernandez getting right. And then the rest of it, again, well, I think it'll just start to really take care of itself. I don't think there's any reason to doubt anybody. I don't think that this is who Gurriel is. This isn't who Bichette is. As we've seen in the last week, he's been fine. Nothing to worry about. Until, of course, we record the next episode of Spin Rate, which you will probably hear later this week. On Thursday, I'll record an episode with Ricky Romero, where hopefully we'll have much more exciting things to report on than a 3-1 season series loss in Cleveland to the newly minted Guardians. Also, I went to Vancouver this weekend. Might have something fun this week, maybe. I don't know. I don't want to put too much pressure on myself or Cam. But did some fun stuff. The Vancouver Canadiens game that you might be able to hear in an upcoming episode of Spin Rate. So keep your ears peeled for that. Until the time later this week when me and Ricky will talk about the Blue Jays on that episode of Spin Rate. That's it for this one. Her name is Caitlin McGrath. You can follow her on Twitter. You can read her on The Athletic. My name is Drew Fairservice, and we will talk to you next week on our next episode of Spin Rate.